This past Friday, retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Jeremiah Denton, who was also a former U.S. Senator from Alabama, passed away at the age of 89. Admiral Denton is most renowned for his time as a prisoner of war at the famed Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam, where he stayed for nearly 8 years, enduring unimaginable torture, yet always staying true in his allegiance to the United States of America, refusing to go along with North Vietnamese propaganda efforts, as well as blinking out in Morse code the letters to the word torture during an attempted propaganda hit by the North Vietnamese in 1966. Admiral Denton later wrote a book called When Hell Was in Session. In 2009, he released an updated version of that book, and at that time, we had the chance to speak to this American hero. In this portion of our conversation, Admiral Denton explains how he expected to be treated by the North Vietnamese when he was first shot down, and how those expectations quickly changed.
Well, I was aware that I was the captive of a totalitarian, communist, atheistic government, and the brutality of the Russians, communists, the brutality of the fascist Germans. They didn't treat our prisoners as bad in Germany as they did in Vietnam. In Japan, it was a different, it depended on who, where you were, where you were captured. So I expected that we would have some rough treatment, but there had been no torture. When I was shot down, I was the 13th captive they got out of the air, and I became a senior officer after I was shot down. I didn't even get to communicate with anybody for weeks, and we used the tap code. They taught me how to use that, and I could tap in Morse code using a nail on the wall. And we ended up with a lot of other ways. And then no, they weren't torturing. And then pretty soon they started torturing for confessions, biographies, or to get you to make a propaganda statement in their favor. And every time you were caught communicating, you were tortured. That went on from then, October to of 65 till October 69, when they changed the treatment, thinking that they were going to be tried for war crimes trials. With Nixon in, they thought he was going to be more aggressive about ending the war and that they might best change the treatment, which they did. And that's generally what happened.
In terms of how you endured this, we've heard from the story of you for many decades now, as well as some other of the prisoners that were there. When it seemed hopeless, they wouldn't let you communicate. They would torture you for communicating. What did you rely on? How did you find the strength to keep going in what seemed like a hopeless situation?
Well, the same place anybody finds strength, the ultimate and the greatest strength can come through God's intervention, his answers to your beseeching him for help. That happens with ladies having babies with difficulty in the delivery, with people in the hospital, cancer, people injured in automobile wrecks. Anybody about to die, whether he, no matter what he lived and what he thought before then, if he's got 5 minutes or 5 seconds to recollect where what he's up to, what he's confronting now, he will say, "God help me."
A senator and admiral, there's two things that I want to talk about in terms of what you encountered once you came home, one on the national security front and one on the cultural front, because I know you've been very active in both. I remember talking to you earlier, and you said that you were surprised when you got home, when you were released in 1973, that America hadn't won the war.
We had won the war at that point. The armistice struck and signed by Vietnam and the United States entailed the freedom being granted to the South Vietnamese, and our country coming through, according to President Nixon's agreement that he worked with them, to give them some aid to develop the resources, particularly in the Mekong Valley and along that river. There were tremendous natural resources there, rice and other products, and that was struck. And I thought things were great when I came home, but then I found out a couple of years later that Congress abrogated that unilaterally, passed legislation saying that we could not, in any event at all, send any more military aid to North Vietnam. And I know from personal experience and personal conferences with them that when we finished the bombings and the blockades, finally put into effect in late 1972, that we destroyed their capability to wage war. We destroyed all of their logistic bases, all of their SAM sites, all of their airplanes, all of their warehouses with ammunition, a lot of their troops. And they had a conference with me just before I came home begging me not to let prisoners exaggerate so that Nixon wouldn't come through on his promise to them. But Congress, anti-war, influenced by the media and the academics, the elite liberals, were able to defeat Nixon. If we'd won that war, they thought, well, they were anti-war all the way through, so Nixon would be reelected and they'd be villains. So that was what was tied up in that. We still suffer from not comprehending the overall picture with respect to our national security. We are in worse shape now, in my opinion, in terms of the percentage of certainty we have about the fact that we're nationally secure than we've had in our history since about Washington's time. And yet President Obama, while campaigning and in office, has said that he's going to cut appropriations for armed services by 25%. President Obama is an intelligent man. He could be earnest. He could be honest with himself. But he does know diddly squat. He knows even less than President Johnson did when he came into office about war and peace, what it takes to maintain it. And unfortunately, the kind of advisor, chief advisor that Johnson got was McNamara, who was in the same boat. He knew how to manage Ford Motor Company, but he didn't know diddly squat about it. And some of the czars and the advisors that President Obama has hired are even more dubious in terms of what their backgrounds are, although he has appointed some people from high-end military and so on. So the jury is still out, in my opinion, on whether or not we can survive if we have a president that unaware and not willing to listen to those who are more aware and knowledgeable.
Retired U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Jeremiah Denton, who was also a former U.S. Senator from the state of Alabama, Denton passed away on Friday. The second part of our conversation focused on Denton's tireless role in the culture wars. Please look for that story on this very same website. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.